Oh, we danced to it a long time ago. Now's your chance to relive it with Living Radio.
Well, sir, by Virginia Avenue standards, the hour is quite late as we enter the small house halfway up in the next block now. It's past 11 o'clock. Mr. and Mrs. Frederick Stembottom have only just departed after an evening of 500, and we find Vic and Sade tidying the living room and chatting casually before going to bed. Listen.
Salted peanuts even under the Davenport.
Poor Fred's the gilly party. He was throwing them up in the air and catching them in his mouth. Although the trick isn't difficult, Fred's success at it was negligible. He missed 3 out of 4 times.
Fred was in jolly spirits tonight. So often, you know, he's grumpy and on edge. Real treat to have him laugh and act the fool.
What was eating Ruthie?
Why?
Something was eating her.
Did you notice it?
I felt that her giggle lacked spontaneity, and I felt that her merriment was forced.
I never thought you'd notice it. You don't generally notice such stuff.
Oh, I'm a more acute guy than you give me credit for. I'm like an Indian stalking through the forest. Nothing escapes me.
Oh, oh, what did Ruthie do that made you think she was bothered?
Nothing at all.
Must have done something.
Uh-uh.
Well, then where'd you get the idea?
I divined it.
Well, she laughed and chattered, same as she always does when we play cards, didn't she?
Her laughter had a fugitive, hollow quality. Her chatter lacked the true gush.
I guess you are a pretty smart fella.
Something was eating Ruthie, eh?
Yeah.
Well, confide in old Vic Gook. Old Vic Gook will give you a crisp new $20 bill.
Well, it's nothing you'll think is important. Really, it's kind of kiddish. But, of course, Ruthie's awful kiddish to begin with. Lee's little old trivial thing can upset her.
Well, tell me what upset Ruthie, and I'll give you a crisp new $20 bill.
She's got secrets.
Delicious. Whisper them in my ear, and I promise they won't go any farther. Ike Kneesuffer is always badgering me to exchange juicy morsels of gossip with him, but in this case,
well,
I
look,
was...
Well, who's here?
Hi.
Well, haven't you been to bed?
I've been to bed, but I haven't been asleep. Read almost half of a Third Lieutenant Stanley book.
How do you account for your presence below stairs?
Come down to see if your people left any ice cream.
I doubt it. Mr. Stembottom was at the ice cream just before they went home. I expect he finished it off.
Can I go out in the kitchen and look?
Ice cream at bedtime gives nightmares.
I'll take the chance.
Plenty of salted peanuts left.
I've had all the salted peanuts I want. Took about a bushel upstairs with me.
You notice one thing about Fred? When he buys the ice cream, he always has to go check up on it before he leaves. Every time. When we buy it, he don't go eat another dish before they go home.
He probably feels entitled to any ice cream he's paid for.
I expect, but we don't do that. When we're at their house and we pay for the ice cream, you don't trot to the kitchen and finish off whatever ice cream's left.
I will next trip, by George. I will get my share of ice cream or die.
I thought it would be. And I bet there was a half a pint in the cardboard carton.
Fred is greedy.
Well, Fred is just Fred.
Mr. Stembottom cleaned it up, Ma.
All right. You'll sleep better anyway. Refreshments at bedtime bring on the willies.
What was eating Ruthie tonight, kiddo?
I'm astonished you noticed any difference in her actions. You don't generally pay any attention to stuff. I hardly noticed anything myself. And I know that girl like a book.
I'm a very shrewd baboon, Sadie. I'm sensitive to the microscopic of outside impulses. My ears pick up faint sounds and my nervous system reacts to tiny stimuli. I expect
now you what you going to do?
Sit on the Davenport a minute.
Hop along upstairs.
I'm not the least bit sleepy.
You're a bad, wicked boy to worry your parents and stay up at such an unseemly hour.
Yeah.
Kindly fetch me my black snake whip. I've decided to thrash you within an inch of your life.
Okay.
Vic, how did you happen to notice Ruthie wasn't quite herself tonight?
Oh, I already told you.
She giggled and chattered and acted exactly like she always does.
Her giggle was perfunctory. The chatter was jerky.
Yeah, that's true. Several long silences.
Well, you're going to confide in old Vic Gook, the man you love so much?
Ruthie's got secrets. They're absolutely her own business and all like that, but same time, when she keeps anything back from me, she feels guilty and troubled.
Molly Clark's Uncle Stab dearly loves to tell about him and his lady friend when...
Ruthie wears glasses.
Yeah?
Ruthie wears glasses. When she bought them and how long she's had them, I don't know. But I do know she wears them. I also know that she feels miserable because she can't bring herself to tell me about it. See, we've always told each other stuff.
Mm.
Her glasses was one reason you noticed her actions were different this evening.
Well, how'd you find out about this?
Figured it out for myself.
Huh?
Sure.
How?
Easy as pie.
Not as regular Philco Vance. Give her a couple of clues and she don't require any bloodhounds to track
Now listen,
down.
Mister, don't you ever dare repeat anything you hear your father and mother talking about.
I wouldn't distribute confidential information.
Well, don't. Better scoot along to bed, hadn't you?
I'm enjoying my part in this discussion. Besides, I'm not sleepy.
No, but when I try to rush you out of bed in the morning, you'll scream like a panther.
Oh.
Tell me how you discovered Ruthie's secret, Dr. Sleech.
Remember tonight how she got spades mixed up with clubs and hearts mixed up with diamonds? Well, she did. About 9 times. I guess I need glasses, she said. I guess I need glasses. And then she laughed. Laugh so funny and shrill. It wasn't her laugh at all. It was a kind of halfway hysterical laugh. Well, I smelled a mouse right then. I was puzzled, don't you see? Goodness, I know Ruthie Stenbottom like I know my big toe. What on earth, I thought to myself. I began to study Ruthie. I noticed what you noticed. She was uneasy and uncomfortable. Of course, she giggled and chattered away like a house afire, but there was something forced about it. And all of a sudden, I saw something that spilled the beans. Something that definitely spilled the beans. People that wear glasses sometimes have a red ridge across their nose, don't they?
Yeah. Ruthie have a red ridge across her nose?
No, she didn't.
No.
Ruthie had a white ridge across her nose.
White?
Powder.
Uh-oh.
You had to look close to see it. You had to look awful close to see it, but it was there. It was there, big as life. She'd carefully dabbed face powder all along the little red line you get from wearing glasses.
Sadie, I must commend you on your astute observational powers.
I couldn't be wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here she's been wearing glasses on the sly for goodness knows how long. Perfectly miserable about it because she can't bring herself to let me in on the secret. Well, I got such a queer feeling when I spotted that white ridge on the bridge of her nose. I felt like going over and putting my arm around her. Boy, would she have boo-hooed if I'd done that.
No disgrace in a woman 37 years old wearing glasses.
No, but Ruthie's Ruthie.
Fred's Fred and Ruthie's Ruthie.
Exactly. All right, and here's another secret.
Betty Rip.
Look at that boy.
His big talk about not being sleepy was propaganda.
I'll say. Now we got the job of waking him up and getting him upstairs.
Tell me Ruthie's other secret.
Remember when they first got here and she was sitting in the easy chair? I says, why, Ruthie, new shoes. Remember that?
Vaguely.
She got her feet out of sight. Remember that?
I guess I was chewing the rag with Fred.
She got her feet out of sight. Acted all flustered and funny. I says, when'd you get them? Oh, Friday, I guess, she said, and immediately changed the subject.
What significance do you attach to that?
For years and years and years, Vic, Ruthie and I have gone together to buy shoes.
Well?
This time she went by herself.
Well?
Why did she go by herself this time?
I wouldn't say. Why did she?
Because she all of a sudden takes a larger size.
Really?
I'm sure of it. Positive.
Well, what's the meaning behind
Very
all this?
Very often, ladies, when they get along to kind of halfway middle age, start taking bigger shoes.
Do they?
Yeah. And it's happened to Ruthie. So there you are. She wears glasses on the sly, and she wears bigger shoes on the sly. And Ruthie being Ruthie, you can appreciate how she feels. No wonder she was uneasy and troubled and miserable tonight. Poor kid. Poor kid. Hey, what time's it getting to be?
Alarmingly close to midnight.
Goodness, let's hop to bed.
Splendid idea.
Do you want to get that child up from the Davenport?
Okay.
I'll lock the door.
Hey, war paper. Awaken. Fire. Murder. Cyclone. Earthquake.
Oh.
Which concludes another brief interlude at the small house halfway up in the next block.
In your Chevrolet, America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee, performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So make a date today to see the USA and see it in your Chevrolet.
We're traveling east, traveling west. Wherever you go, Chevy service is best. Southward or north, near place or far, there's a Chevrolet dealer for your Chevrolet car.
So make a date today to see the USA and see it in your Chevrolet.
Well, sir, it's late afternoon as we approach the small house halfway up in the next block now, and here on the front porch we find Mr. Victor Gook and his son, Mr. Rush Gook, swinging gently in the swing. The gentlemen arrived home from office and baseball diamond only a few minutes ago, and they're chatting idly about various unimportant matters. We hear Rush say,
"Nobody can say for a fact oranges are more delicious than bananas, can they?"
"No."
"Well, Nicer Scott said it for a fact."
"Did you face him one upside the snooch?"
"No, but I felt like it." "Baboon. Oranges are more delicious than bananas," he says. "Any half-wit knows that." Smelly Clark took him up on it. "Look here, chum," he says. "You go ahead and like oranges. I'll go ahead and like bananas."
As far Who's as horses... in the living room, Burgess?
Hi.
Where you been?
Next door.
Scott's?
Donahue's.
I was worried sick. Felt it in my bones that you'd run away with the brickmush man and got married.
Uh-huh.
I'm still trembling a little.
Yeah. What's his name? Finds you, Willie?
Yeah. We made connections over in Tapman's vacant lot.
Well, he certainly raised an awful holler in the backyard after you left this noon. Rush, rush, rush. I went out and shushed him up. Mr. Donahue had just come in off of the Kansas City freight drag and was in bed trying to sleep.
He's got an awful loud voice on him, that guy.
I'll say. I tell you, your mother scolded him?
Uh-uh.
Well, I did. "You'll have to quit that yelling," I said. "The man next door wants to sleep. Rush isn't home."
"Who are you talking about?"
"What's his name? You know. Sonny, wouldn't you like to sit on the rail and let Mother have the swing?"
"There's room for three."
"Oh, not without crowding in like sardines."
"Shucks, I was here first."
"Do you want me to perch myself up on the railing?"
"Okay."
"Big news from next door."
"Really?"
"Mr. Donahue went to work." "Oh, thanks, Willie." "I said this was a rotten, skimpy porch swing when we first bought it."
"What did Brother Donahue go to work and do?"
"Something I bet nobody else ever done in the last 9 million years.
"You intrigue me."
"He asked the railroad company to give him his old job back."
"Go on."
"Here he is, the monstrous, big, important traveling inspector of locomotive. And he sent an application in to the officials requesting they let him go back to being an ordinary engineer like he was before his promotion."
"I want to know."
"Astonishing?"
"Yeah."
"Surely Clark's Uncle Strap once found himself in a situation."
"I'm telling you something, Rush." "Oh." "Think of the salary part."
"He returned to his old salary, eh?"
"Of course."
"Well, quit keeping a fella in suspense. I'm on needles and pins to learn why he...
"Simply couldn't stand the gaff."
"Oh."
"Simply couldn't stand the gaff."
"Well, I'm surprised. I thought being traveling inspector of locomotives was a lot easier job than running an engine."
"Uh-uh."
"No?"
"No, you can't sit down."
"Traveling inspector of locomotives can't sit down?"
"Traveling inspector of locomotives can't sit down. He has to stand up. There's only 2 seats in an engine cab, see? One for the engineer and one for the fireman."
"Oh."
"Well, imagine riding to Kansas City or Chicago or St. Louis. 4, 5, and 6 hour trips standing on your feet. And hanging on to something to keep from being tossed out on the railroad tracks besides." "For months and months and months, Mr. Donahue's poor feet have been absolutely killing him. She told me. She said he'd come in off in a freight drag so exhausted he could hardly speak. Worn to a frazzle and haggard as a horse. I think I've noticed he's been looking older since he got promoted.
In line with your remark, ma'am. The other
day, hard for him to make up his mind to quit, though. Seemed like such a childish reason to quit. I quit because I got no place to sit down.
Hmm.
On top of that, he didn't have to wear overalls. He was a huge, big, important traveling inspector of locomotives. A fine position. Railroad men looked up to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the salary. Well, I don't want to go back to a smaller salary when he can have a larger salary. But Mr. Donahue's made up his mind. He'll take his overalls back and his little salary back and be happy.
Well, doggone it, you'd think the engineers and firemen would let him sit in their seat once in a while.
Well, not done that way, I guess. Traveling inspector of locomotives is supposed to stay on his feet and watch the different gauges and meters and levers and stuff.
Huh.
But think of standing on your feet from here to Kansas City in a sway and lurching freight engine.
Mm-hmm.
Person has to hold on good and tight to the tender or whatever it is in order not to get thrown right out on the railroad tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Donahue, remember, is no chicken. Of course, he's not old or anything, but he's worked hard all his life and has to take it a little easier anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Mom, every once in a while, a fireman on an engine has to shovel coal. I should think when he got up to shovel coal, Mr. Donahue could grab his seat.
Well, it's not done that way, I guess. Traveling inspector of locomotives is supposed to have dignity. It's up to him to keep on his feet.
Oh.
Tell you another bad thing, Vic, about this good situation he wants to give up.
What's that?
Clothes.
Clothes?
Ordinary engineers wear overalls. Overalls don't show dirt so much, and a fella can wear them several trips without washing them. Traveling inspector of locomotives don't wear overalls. Wears a regular suit, coat, pants, and vest. Also a shirt. See, he's more or less the boss and has to put up a neat appearance. Well, sir, Miss Donahue says you should see his clothes after a run. Even a little dinky run up to Joliet, and his shirt is black as my shoe, and his suit is so full of smoke and soot and grime, you'd think it was a gunny sack. Well, his clothes have to be sent to the cleaners, of course, and well, I guess the bills they pay that cleaner every month would knock your eye out.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen Mr. Donahue come home from the roundhouse after a trip, haven't you?
Sure.
Look like a hobo?
You people talking about hobos. Willis Rohrbach claims he got so dirty one time. Innocent bystanders were shot.
There's no sense in putting your feet up on that pillar. Only makes ugly scratches on the paint. Besides, you're liable to fall off the rail and break your neck.
Oh.
Sit civilized.
Mm.
It's just too bad. Here's a fellow that worked himself up to a fine, wonderful position with a dandy salary and everything else, and then has to hand it back on a silver platter. They had plans for that extra money, too. Thought they might even have enough saved by a year from this fall to build a house out on Oakland Avenue.
Well,
that plan will go up the flue, of course. Take them 5 years at Mr. Donahue's other salary to accumulate what's required.
How does Ms. Donahue feel about her husband's decision?
Well, she's disappointed, naturally. But at the same time, she don't want to take chances on his health. Wonderful little woman, Ms. Donahue.
Smelly Clarkson goes strap dearly loves to reminisce.
What do you say about them feet?
Oh, by George, unconsciously I put my feet up.
Get them down again. Tell you another bad thing, Vic, about this good job.
What's that?
Mr. Donahue loses out on jolly fellowship with his friends.
How so?
Well, mainly because he's the boss.
Mm.
Well, you take it when he makes a trip to St. Louis, for instance. At the end of the run, the fireman and the engineer go to a restaurant patronized by railroad men. Well, Mr. Donahue, of course, goes along. All right. They go inside the eating place, and the other two fellas sit at the counter. Well, Mr. Donahue ain't supposed to sit at the counter. He's traveling inspector of locomotives. Dignity, see? He has to take a table all by himself. Counter is crowded with brakemen and engineers and firemen and flagmen and so on, all laughing and talking and having a high old time. All friends of Mr. Donahue, too. He'd love to join them, but he can't. He has to sit at his table with the white cover on it and watch everybody enjoy themselves. Day after day, that business. St. Louis, Kansas City, Chicago, Joliet, Alton, Peoria. Every place.
Huh?
Miss Donahue told me it almost breaks his heart. So, when you add everything up, it looks like the wisest thing to do after all. Too bad, though. Too bad.
You people might be interested to hear that Leland Richards plan.
Oh, we have to have groceries, Willie.
Okay, Leland Richards.
Let's go in the house and see what we need.
Okay, Leland Richards plan.
You going to stay out here, Vic?
Might as well.
I don't make any noise, will you?
Why would I make noise?
Well, it's getting along for 5 o'clock. Pretty soon people will be walking past from work and you'll be hollering hello to them.
Well?
Holler softer, just wave. Mr. Donahue's trying to sleep and he's dead tired. He can only stay in bed till 10 and then he has to ride a freight drag to Jacksonville. Holler soft to the people that go past. Or just wave. Will you?
Okay.
Well, let's hop to the kitchen, Willie, and see what we have to have from the grocery store.
Which concludes another brief interlude at the small house halfway up in the next block.
Well, that's it for this track of Heirloom Radio, a different kind of oldie show on SoundCloud. Please follow this podcast, as I can guarantee you will hear a wide variety of not only top-quality old-time radio shows, but shows that have been restored to bring you a superior listening experience. Thank you for listening. I do not take it for granted. So until next time, stay well and be safe.